China again a case apart. Instead of domestic inflation challenges, it has faced a wave of Omicron and stringent lockdowns because of the zero COVID policy. It is now in a reopening phase. Besides its own GDP impact, concerns were high with supply chain disruptions, particularly because of China's key positions in many value chains. High-frequency data on activity, trade, and shipping showed limited signs of spillovers, although one must consider the time lags between confinements and the manifestation of supply chain disruptions. So, spillovers to the rest of the world from China's confinements may still appear in the following weeks. The major doubt remains, however, about where the growth slide down in China accompanying its rebalancing will settle, particularly now without the support by infrastructure and housing booms, equivalent to the one since the beginning of the last decade. Well, Ukraine, Russia, and neighbors being directly impacted by the war obviously constitute a subgroup apart. High recession risks in Europe also weigh in the case of those emerging markets deeply integrated to it. Elsewhere, one must differentiate the case of commodity exporters and importers. Despite inflationary impacts and corresponding monetary policy tightening, as well as risks of social unrest, as food and household energy comprise a large share of poor people's consumption baskets, commodity exporters in general have benefited from improved terms of trade, increased fiscal revenues, and stronger foreign trade balance. Not by chance, their GDP forecasts have slightly increased since the beginning of the year. Commodity importers face an opposite shock, of course, but one must do country-specific impact evaluations. Take the case of Morocco, a big exporter of fertilizers, highly more expensive as an outcome of the shocks. When one estimates the net terms of trade effect, it comes out negative for Morocco because of its energy imports. So, compositions of food baskets and sources of imports also matter. Middle East and North Africa consume a lot of wheat imported from Russia and Ukraine, whereas the proportions of wheat in grain consumption in Asia and Latin America are way lower. So, country-specific evaluations of shock impacts are necessary. Let's turn then to tightening global financial conditions. How likely is a repeat of the 2013 taper tantrum or the May storm of 2018? How about the dollar appreciation, which is reckoned as painful for emerging markets with significant shares of U.S. dollar-denominated liabilities? When an increase in the expected U.S. policy rate is driven by positive news about economic activity in the U.S., on balance, this combination tends to be beneficial for emerging markets, supporting them through the trade channel and through a reduction in risk premiums and often stimulating capital inflows. Different weights of trade and financial channels of transmission for individual emerging markets matter here. Trade signals matter for Mexico and Central America, whereas the financial channel has a higher weight for South American countries that rather have China as their major export destination. The situation tends to be more challenging for every emerging market when, like now, the tightening of global financial conditions is driven by concerns about inflation or changes in risk sentiment. The nature of tightening, whether it is orderly or accompanied by market turbulence, including episodic tantrums in U.S. dollar funding markets, will make a difference. Here, diversity comes to the fore again, and one needs to go on a case-by-case basis. On one extreme, we have frontier market economies overly indebted in importers of food and energy. Sri Lanka may just have been a canary in a mine, signaling a wave of incoming debt defaults and restructuring, as the IMF and the World Bank have warned about. On the other extreme, more favorable, there are several emerging markets that have strengthened stocks of reserves and current account positions relative to the past. At the end of last year, 58% of emerging markets were estimated to have international reserves exceeding 100% of the IMF's adequacy metric. The original scene of currency mismatch in the case of public debt is not as deep seen as in the past, even with the outflows from emerging markets' local currency debt last year. Increased private savings during the pandemic have even facilitated a substitution of foreign creditors by domestic investors in the acquisition of domestic public debt. Private non-financial debt in foreign currency relative to the size of the economy varies considerably across countries, and some have significant exposures, particularly on the corporate side. Of course, Turkey remains like its fragile five times, and Argentina has been out since its default, but they are not representative. Looking at the capital flows, reshuffles of composition or across-the-board unwinding of emerging market portfolios because of the shocks have been relatively contained, except for Russia and Ukraine, of course. In the case of China, COVID and geopolitics seem to have triggered a sharp sell-off of stocks earlier this year, but investors have started to return in the last few weeks. Overall, the point is, one must rely on a country-by-country approach, looking at their global trade and financial linkage when it comes to analyzing risk returns in emerging markets along the ongoing perfect storm.